Hello, Greg Barth, back with another edition of Noir on the Radio, and joining me this time is author Paul Heatley. Paul Heatley lives in the northeast of England. His short stories have appeared online and in print for publications such as Thuglit, Horror Sleaze Trash, Spelk, Near to the Knuckle, Shotgun Honey, The Pink Factory, and The Flash Fiction Offensive, among others. He also contributes music reviews to R2 magazine sometimes. His fiction is dark and bleak, populated with misfits and losers on a hellbound descent, often eschewing genre and geography to create a nightmarish vision of a harsh and uncaring world. His books include The Motel Whore, The Vampire, and The Boy, form a very loose trilogy, all set in the same nameless town and featuring recurring characters. And his latest work is titled Fat Boy, and just released a few days ago by All Due Respect Books. So, Paul Heatley, welcome to Noir on the Radio. Thanks for coming on.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So Paul, tell us a little bit about yourself for any listeners that may be unfamiliar with you and your work.
Okay. Well, I write crime fiction, primarily noir fiction, dark, violent, dirty generally, sometimes smutty, sometimes humorous. I think by and large, the biggest thing to know is that a lot of them are set in America. I'm not an American. I've been there once before. But I kind of write what I please. I'll write what I want, whatever suits me, whatever I feel is best for the story I'm writing. I have written things set in England. But like I say, by and large, most of my stuff is American set. I think if you know that going in, you're not going to be too shocked.
Well, congratulations on your latest release, Fat Boy. Just hot off the press a few days ago from All Due Respect Books. I actually just finished reading it about a half hour ago, and man, what a fantastic book. What would you like to tell our listeners about Fat Boy?
It's a short novella, let's say, that I wrote about 2 years ago. It started life as a short story. Originally, it was a short story about a boyfriend-girlfriend team that had a son that suffered, I think at the time it was cerebral palsy or something, and they needed to come into money, and they decided to kidnap a local businessman that had money, and they would hold him hostage in their trailer, and there was some inadvertent torture, so to speak. And I kind of got an idea. I read about some serial killer that operated out of motels, and him and his wife, they would kidnap the victims, and they had rooms set off and cages outside of the motel. And sorry, not motel, trailer. I should have been saying trailer. Outside of the trailer, and they were killing people that way. And it sparked an idea, and I thought this boyfriend-girlfriend team could be doing that. And then when I came, it just kept getting bigger, basically. It kept getting bigger out of this short story that I planned to write, and I sat in it, and then gradually it grew to novella length, and the original seed of the idea had, everything around it had mutated, so the characters, they're still boyfriend-girlfriend, but they're estranged. The girlfriend doesn't actually appear in the story, so to speak, a hero, but she never appears. The main character became Latino. The primary antagonist, the eponymous fat boy, he is a fat white businessman. Like I say, I wrote this 2 years ago, and I had no idea that it would become so relevant 2 years later, under President Trump, with a fat white businessman harassing and antagonizing Latinos. Like I say, I think that kind of sums up what Fat Boy is. It's a heist novel, so to speak. It's a kidnapping novel, and obviously it's noir. Things go wrong.
Things go wrong indeed. and it strikes me that the novella length seems to be almost perfect for crime fiction these days. I know that that All Due Respect, they do quite a lot of that. Do you agree that that about 100 or so pages is almost a perfect length for these types of stories? And if so, why do you think that might be the case?
It certainly fits. I do have plans to write longer things. I have written a couple of longer things, but to answer your question, I think the reason it fits is because with novella, it's primarily it's all action. It's incident, incident, incident. And you find that you don't need to stretch that out for 200 pages, 300 pages, etc. A lot of the time, if you're just using the incident, you're cutting out all the bullshit of, oh, let's sit at this coffee table and have a chat about emotions. You've just cut 50 pages, so to speak, and you've just got the meat of the story. You've got the meat. You've got the bare bones of it, and you don't need all the excess flab. And 100 pages does seem to be a decent length. You've got James M. Kay and Jim Thompson, etc. They're a lot of their timeless novellas. They're all in at 100 pages, and but it's big themes. You don't need to go big to get these big themes of murder, revenge, etc. And the novella length does seem to suit that.
Could agree more. I think that that it these noir tales, feels kind of like a good 90-minute crime movie, and it's they're not bloated, they're lean, they're mean, they get to the point pretty quick, and I really appreciate the kind of the comeback of the novella, thanks to publishers like All Due Respect Books and the just the freedom of e-books and how things like the Kindle and Amazon have kind of changed the required length for fiction. Now in Fat Boy, the main character Joey, we see from the first chapter that the guy has some issues. There's drinking, there's violence in chapter one in self-defense, but we are kind of left wondering if his anger issues are real or not and how bad they are. You mentioned he's estranged from his girlfriend, and we get some glimpses along the way. The strange thing is, I kind of felt myself rooting for the guy, even though he was doing this terrible thing. How do you make a character like Joey sympathetic in a work like this?
Joey is just—he's just an everyman, isn't he? He's got that thing inside him. He's not necessarily a bad person, but he's capable of bad things. The alcohol brings it out of him. His temper brings it out of him. His upbringing brings it out of him. His environment, being stuck on this trailer park, working in a dead end bar, having a racist customer—you know—it's. If so long as he's not, he's not the bad things he does, they're all justified in his mind. If he can justify them in his mind, the reader can justify them for him. And with that, with that knowledge, that can make him a likable character. I didn't necessarily set out to make him likable. I just wrote him. If people like him, that's great. I do set out with that Jim Thompson ethos of if somebody likes this character, okay, that's cool. If not, okay, he's probably not going to make it out with all of his limbs, all of his fingers, etc. But if the antagonist is worse than your anti-hero, then you're probably going to like the anti-hero more.
Yeah, I think so. He's kind of the underdog, and to your point, there's that maybe unintended political relevance that we see in the world today. So there might be some of that at play as well. You touch on some things in the book, maybe not in a heavy way, but they're kind of there. Things like race, class, those types of things. But in a lot of ways, the book is about being a father. The need to be with your child, and the whole issue of being a failed husband. What drew you to those themes?
Fear. Fear that I have a son. His mother and I aren't together. We get on fine. It's dedicated to her. You'll see her name in the dedication page. But like I said, it's primarily fear. That's where it comes from, that he might grow up to dislike me, might not like me. He might. I think any father would have this fear of doing a bad job. it's just, I could say fear over and over again, really. That's basically the seed of it. It is just a general fear, you know, a fear that you're doing a bad job by your kids.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can really identify with the guy and his, you know, his financial struggles. And then, you know, you mix in a little alcohol, which a lot of people, you know, there's a spectrum when it comes to alcohol. And you know, people often feel the need to keep themselves in check in that area. And then, you know, are you providing well for your family?
I've met plenty of people that do drink. And there's a lot of people that, you know, you can see them hit that point where they should stop. And they just don't. They keep going. They keep going. They keep going. Things are getting worse. They're falling out with their partner. They're falling out with their friends. They're upsetting their kids. And like I say, I don't drink, but for a character, a flawed character like Joey, it worked for him to be such a heavy drinker. It worked for him to working in a bar and be surrounded by these other alcoholics who, at the heart of it, they think that drinking is making them happy, but it's not. It's making them worse. It's making them more miserable. And he can see that, but it doesn't deter him.
And you feel for the, you know, the girlfriend in the situation, or this behavior is putting such a strain on their relationship. Paul, what do you think draws you and readers and my audience, for that matter, to this kind of dark fiction? We love this stuff.
it's that thing I mentioned earlier about Joey. He might not necessarily be a bad guy, but there are those bad thoughts, those bad feelings inside him. It's that lizard brain that all humans have, of the fight it, fuck it, kill it, eat it mentality from being a caveman. And you're not these days going to go out on the streets and fight it, fuck it, kill it, eat it. But if somebody cuts you off in traffic, you're going to be pissed off. If somebody cuts in front of you in a line, you're going to be pissed off, and you're going to stare at the back of their head and think about punching them. I know I do. And, you know, I mean, it might be a bit extreme, and maybe not everyone does, but I think if people get to down to the bones of it, they do. I think if they admit to themselves, they do. And that's where, you know, violence, movies, television, and music, that's why it works. You know, it's catharsis, you know. It's a vicarious thrill to read or watch these people doing these things that you think about doing, but you wouldn't do. You know, you at least have that level of control over yourself. But it's nice to sit back loose and think, yeah, fuck that guy, kick his teeth in.
You know, I think I read something. It might have been, I'd like to attribute it, it might have been to Paul Bishop might have written this, but he was talking about how after World War II, you know, people came back from this, just this gruesome mission that they were on and all the things that they saw. And then it was time to come back home to, you know, go to a regular job. And there was this, you know, maybe this temptation to kind of continue to be the tough, outlaw, you know, kind of, rebel person and continue with the behaviors and feelings, you know, of the war, and that the noir fiction maybe was a subconscious way of society coming to terms with, if you did that, these are the consequences, because most, you know, noir by definition, they don't end well. So it's an opportunity to kind of live that life, like you say, vicariously. And then maybe there's a, maybe there's a lesson at the end. I don't know. I think that's it's could be a reason why we're drawn to this type of thing.
Yeah.
You've written a few other things too, and I'm thinking of The Motel Horror, The Vampire, The Boy, and a few others in a collection as well. What would you like our listeners to know about those works?
Well, the six short novellas, the first three you mentioned, The Motel Horror, The Vampire, The Boy, they are a loose trilogy. They're available standalone. They're collected in a paperback called The Motel Whore and Other Stories, which also features two previously unpublished short stories, The Shoot and The Painter. I set myself the goal to write and release six novellas over the course of a year. it was something for me. It was to show that I could do it, that I could, for myself, put them out, write them, edit them, put them out. And I did that. And the other three, The Mess, The Pitbull, and Three, they're totally standalone, those three pieces. And again, you know, all six of them together, it was just that goal to put things out, get the word on the page, get them out so people could read them, get some feedback, you know. And by and large, it did. I didn't do any promotional work for them until I really collected them into paperback. But, you know, they were short, they were cheap, and they sold reasonably well. They got out there, people read them. A lot of people, by and large, seem to have liked them. The vampire, particularly at first, I don't think people realized it wasn't about a vampire. A lot of the reviews on Goodreads reflected that. The people reading it, reviewing it, it reflected that. They did think it was about a vampire, though the first line of the synopsis is, Martin is not a vampire. And it was basically the Motel Whore series is... It's about a small, nameless American town, and it's just the drudge of getting through this life where basically your options are work or drugs. You know, you've just got to get through. You've got to survive. Hey, there's a whore in the local motel. You can fuck, and she'll make you feel great for 5 minutes. But what's the effect on her of you going there and having a good time? And I have a lot of... The Motel Whore, particularly, that story, I really, it's one of my favorites. It's very short. I think it's the shortest of all six, but it's, I think, without blowing my own horn too much, I think I did manage to squeeze a lot into those 46 pages or whatever it is. Like I said, they're very dark pieces. They're very miserable pieces. They're very depressing. So if you like that kind of thing, definitely check it out. You know, if you like feeling miserable and bad about yourself, but then taking a look around and thinking, actually, my life's not so bad, then they're definitely for the discerning listener. The Mess and the Pitbull are British set, standalone again. The Mess is about a low-level drug dealer in the northeast of England who... makes a colossal fuck up and has to tidy it up. The Pitbull is about a man who makes his living from fighting dogs. And Three is again American set, and that's about a hitman who has to take out three targets in one night. Inspirationally, the Pitbull was inspired. I don't know if you've ever seen the Nicholas Winding Refn film Bronson, starring Tom Hardy, and there's a scene in that where he goes into battle and they release two, I think it's Alsatians or something. They set two Alsatians loose on him and he has to fight them. And that's where that came from. There was a story I heard years and years ago. I think I heard my dad tell it in a pub or something about some guy in Gateshead who basically looked at another man that had a dog with him. I think it was a Doberman or something, and said, I'll give you a tenner to let me take that dog outside and fight it. And the guy did, and then the guy walked back in, and he says, well, where's my dog? And he says, well, I'm still alive, aren't I? And, you know, that was...
Oh.
Yeah, it was a pretty brutal story. Yeah, I mean, I heard it second, third hand, something like that. And the Motel Whore was actually inspired by a scene in the first season of Breaking Bad when Jesse is hiding out at a motel, and that prostitute goes into the bedroom with him.
Fascinating. Yeah, intriguing. I'm really looking forward to getting into those later today as well. You set them up brilliantly. So let's talk a little bit about the craft of writing itself. When did you realize you wanted to be a writer?
I remember very young, I did write a lot. I think I tried to make comic books, but I can't draw. So I guess I did the second best thing, and that was right. I would get pens and big A4 lined notebooks, and I would try to write stories and then, but they were always based on things I'd seen, like Sharp, you know, the few episodes I'd seen of Sharp, I would try to translate them and make a new character, and of course his first name would be Paul. And then gradually as I grew up, you know, I was always writing in notebooks, etc. And then when I was 14, we got a computer, and we'd never had a computer before in our house. And every day I finished school, I got home, and I wrote. And they say that it takes 10,000 hours to get good at any one thing. And I think that that's where I did the where I filled in the chunk of that 10,000 hours to at least get halfway decent, you know. And then, so I think 14 roughly would probably be when I started thinking to myself, it's something people can do. I can be one of them people that could write. But, you know, I was quite slack about it. I did let time get away. I didn't really commit myself the way I should. And it was really, I think I got very, very serious about it after my son was born nearly 5 years ago. And that's since then, that's when I've had the most success with it. That's when I sat myself down at a laptop every day and wrote. And that's where the success has come from. He has driven me to write these things that when he's older, he can look at and think, oh, my dad's done some stuff. That's pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah. What does writing look like for you? You mentioned you sit down and write every day. Do you outline your plots, or do you just kind of jump in and start typing away and see where the story takes you?
By and large, I do outline. I find that things are a lot easier if I outline. There have been one or two pieces that I have just kind of sat down, wrote, and they've worked. You know, they have worked out. Fat Boy, I didn't have an outline for, but An Eye for an Eye, which was put out by Near to the Knuckle, that had an outline. And I just found it was a lot easier having it planned out beforehand to sit down and write every day and know what was coming next and not have to spend 10 to 20 minutes or so thinking, right, what are these guys going to do next? How can I get them out of this predicament? How can I not get them into another Gordian knot style predicament that's going to take me longer than 20, 30 minutes to manipulate them out of? So I do find planning, definitely. I'm quite meticulous in my planning these days, which, when I say I write every day, I don't necessarily mean I'm sitting at the laptop churning out 1,000 words, 2,000 words, or even 500 words. It could be that I'm sitting and planning or I'm editing. But I always do something every day. I'm always writing, planning, or editing.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think that the plan helps. I don't have a lot of time at the end of the day on weekdays to do much writing. So I find it helps if I kind of know what I'm going to write in advance. Mm. It's just more efficient use of the time, and I'm more productive. So I like having the plan. I just don't have the time on hand to kind of figure it out as I go. What authors have influenced you the most, Paul?
Well, I've touched on American writing a lot, and I have a trifecta. There's James Ellroy, Chester Himes, and Jim Thompson. They are my trifecta. You know, they're the three. Everything else kind of works around them. You know, there's Stephen King, there's George V. Higgins, who was a big, big influence on Fat Boy, Don Winslow, Joyce Carol Oates, Zadie Smith. You know, I could go on. There's a shitload of writers that I'm a big fan of. Not necessarily just American. I did mention Zadie Smith there. She's British. You know, there's Dostoevsky, there's Chekhov, there's Murakami, you know. I've got a list as long as my arm, but we'll keep it short. They're the main ones, yeah.
Well, that's a damn good trifecta for sure.
yeah.
What advice would you give to someone sitting down to write their first novel today?
Prepare to throw it away. If it's your very first one, chances are it's going to be a piece of trash. It's going to be shit. But learn from it. It's those 10,000 hours I mentioned. You know, sit down, plan it out, write it out, read it back, cringe, delete the whole thing, say you'll never write anything again, then sit down and do it all over again.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. I think that any type of craft or art, the first time out, it's not going to be fantastic. Even if you're painting something or drawing something, or, you know, you're making a quilt, whatever the case may be, you're learning as you do the first one. And, you know, it may not be the one that that catches on, but you gain so much experience from it.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think of writers as entertainers, and I'm always curious what entertains the writer. You know, what are you reading, listening to, watching for entertainment currently?
Well, at the minute, I've got a few books on the go. I'm reading The Art of Asking by Amanda Palmer, High Fidelity by Nick Hornby, I Was Dora Suarez by Derek Raymond, and Johnny Panic and the Bible of Dreams by Sylvia Plath. A lot of them are short stories, but I found my to-read pile was getting out of control, and if I stuck to one book at a time, I was just never going to get through it. So I've permitted myself to have more than one book on the go. Musically, at the minute, I've really gotten back into music lately. There was a period of time I was just kind of listening to the same stuff over and over again, but recently I've been listening to a lot of The Gun Club, Run the Jewels, Fugazi, Al Green, Marvin Gaye, Richard Hell, Suicide, you know, just the Wu-Tang Clan, just The Clash, The Kills. It just, you know, just I'm really, I've got a very broad taste in music. Watching-wise, I saw the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie last week, and that was awesome, if you haven't seen it. I don't know if you've seen the first one, but it's well worth checking out. The argument could be made that the first one is better, but the second one's very enjoyable. TV-wise, Game of Thrones will be back soon. That's exciting. The Walking Dead, I enjoy.
Oh, I can't wait.
I don't think there's many people that can. The Leftovers as well. The last season of The Leftovers will be coming at some point soon. I'm really excited about that. I've really enjoyed the first two seasons of The Leftovers. And the big news, of course, is Twin Peaks is coming back, and I'm very, very, very excited about Twin Peaks coming back.
Nice. So Fatboy is out. What new and exciting projects are you working on these days that we can look forward to seeing in the near future?
Well, Fatboy was accepted back in September, and I had the thing with Fatboy, that initial elation of, yes, all due respect, I've taken it. They're going to publish it in May. That's so far away, but now I need to get something else lined up. And now May is here and Fatboy is released and I don't have anything else lined up, but I am still working on a lot of things. I've written two or three novellas. I've finished a novel. I'm in the editing stages with them. Hopefully I'll get them placed. Short story wise, I've got a short story coming out with Spelk in June, I think. I will be in the third issue of Crime Syndicate. And I have a story with Yellow Mama appearing in October, I think. But novel and novella length, I do need to try and play some things. I'm currently in the editing period with a lot of things. And I'm planning a follow-up to An Eye for an Eye. So I'm currently outlining that. And hopefully, if it writes well, if it reads well, Near to the Knuckle will be interested in that. And there'll be a sequel out for An Eye for an Eye.
Excellent. Yeah, lots to look forward to. So where's the best place for absolutely. Where's the best place for people to find you out there on the web and keep up with what's going on with you?
I don't have a website, but I am on pretty much everything else. I can be found on Twitter at Paul Heatley 3. I am on Instagram, Heatley_Paul. Facebook is the best place to find me. I'm on there most. I find Facebook is the best place to communicate with other people. It's the best place to share your news. But yeah, Facebook is the best place to find me.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I have a hard time understanding Twitter. I use it. I see that people see things.
Yes.
But man, I don't know how.
that's
a funny
Twitter
thing.
Twitter is the one I really, really struggle with. I've committed to it. I'm persevering with it, but I don't particularly like it. And what I did find exciting last week, though, or the week before, was I tweeted my picture with Mark Lanegan, who I interviewed last year, and he retweeted it, and I got very excited about that.
Mark Lanegan of the Screaming Trees?
Yes, Mark Lanegan of the Screaming Trees.
Wow, how was that, man? I got to check that out. Where can we find that interview?
It's in R2 magazine. I can't remember which issue number it was, but it had Ray Davies from The Kinks on the front cover, and it was really cool. I've been a big Mark Lanegan fan for a long, long time, over 10 years, I think. And to meet him, it was just phenomenal. And he was so nice. I'd heard so many worrying things about how he doesn't like being interviewed. He doesn't like interviewers. And so I went in, I was like, this is my musical idol. What if he hates me? What if he's really rude? It's horrible. But I went in, he was so cool. Yeah, he shook my hand. He was really cool. And it was just awesome. Really, really awesome.
That's fantastic. He's done so much. I'll have to check
that
out. I'm a fan as well. And you know, with musicians or any artist really, you know, there's always that fear that, and some of them, you know, they're a jerk, right? But you listen to the music you enjoy anyway. But you probably wouldn't want to hang out with them. So it's always nice to hear that that they're, some of them are nice, right? Well, that's cool.
Yeah,
I'll check that out. R2. So Paul, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking to us about your work. It's been a blast having you on, and you know, let's do this again when your next thing comes out.
Oh, definitely.
And for the listeners, I encourage you to check out Paul Heatley's Fat Boy, now out from All Due Respect Books. Man, it's a quick, compelling read. It's first-rate noir. Definitely not to be missed. It's everything this show is about. Also, check out Paul's collection, Motel Horror and Other Stories. You can find them all very easily on Facebook. While you're at it, keep an eye out for my upcoming release, Everglade, which is the fifth and last volume in the Selena series. It's going to be out on July 1st. Until then, All Due Respect Books is running a sale on the first book in the series, Selena. It's available in e-copy for 99 cents. So you can find that on Amazon as well. And Noir on the Radio will be back for a special second edition this evening at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific. And I'll have Robert Knott joining me to discuss his latest book, Revelation. And you don't want to miss that. Until next time, this is Greg Barth with Noir on the Radio. And Noir on the Radio is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC.